share with you a theme that is very interesting for me. And actually, I even found a title for it, so it's going to be like a proper title. And I named it The Never-Ending Journey, or The Journey Back Home. Back, it seems to me, many years back. I remember a certain point in my life where I can say some journey has begun for me. And although it seems many, many years, it's actually not that many, but it's just so many things have happened since. And I just remember the feeling that I had that there must be more to life than this. And I couldn't really put it into words, but I remember saying to myself, I want to smell the fragrance of the freesia. You all know what freesia is? It's this yellow flower, sort of like narcissus, so, but very sweet smell, and happened to be one of my favorites. Now, remember, I've been putting these bulbs of freesia in my garden and waiting for them to come out, and when they eventually came out, they were so beautiful, and I was going, you know, almost every day to sort of say hello and smell and have a taste of this fresh yellow, you know, something that was. But most of the times, I wasn't really there. I mean, the flower was there, and I was obviously going to smell it, but something was missing. You know what I mean? It's like I was smelling it, but I wasn't there. Either I was thinking, you know, about what I'm going to do next, or what's going to happen next, or many, many things that were just, I think it's not something, you're not, you don't know what I'm talking about. I think it sort of happens most of the time to most of us. But one thing that really sort of maybe started this process for me was the very strong feeling I had. I want to smell, to really smell once and for all, maybe first time in my life, this fragrance, this smell of this flower. It was sort of a sentence that was coming along with me all through the journey that I started, or actually continued from that moment. And I find it quite interesting, especially in the context of this retreat, that we walk so much every day. We walk, it seems, for miles and miles, even though it's probably not that long, but hours still. We walk in the sun. We walk on this gravel, you know, on these stones, and like step after step after step after step. No reason, it seems, just to be able to come back home. It brings a lot of reflection for me. And it seems to me that the bigger the distance one has to cover until this meeting is happening, it's maybe an indication of how far we got away from this place that I call home. Interesting way. Sometimes it's enough just to stop and turn around and face whatever we were not facing in order to be home. So we can just arrive like that. And all the effort of doing before was serving as a maybe some kind of preparation for this moment. But the moment itself, the moment of arising, is so, so simple. It's astonishing. And yet, when we're there, we say, oh, of course. Yeah, that feels right. It's there. I remember, I think it was 7 years ago, I sat first time retreat in Bodh Gaya, and Yanai was one of the teachers there. And it was a very, very interesting, powerful, beautiful, horrible experience, all of these together. One thing I remember clearly from this retreat was the undazed. I've noticed something very, very strange that I've been doing. I sort of saw myself. I was sitting, obviously, with my eyes closed, but I sort of had some sense of my body twisting to one side as if I don't want to see something. I don't want to look. I'm sure I wasn't moving, but the inner movement inside felt very, very clear, as if I was sort of doing this. And it was so shocking to me then to discover that I'm actually pushing something away, that I had no idea this is what I was doing. And that marked another maybe process, if you like. We use this word a lot, but just to get acquainted, to befriend, what is this I don't want to see? What is this that is causing me to sort of do this? And on many levels, it's like I do this to life. Like, life is here, but I'm maybe later. When I grow older, I can deal with it, or when I'm wiser, or like that. A lot of fear involved in this sort of shrinking away from life, basically. And what I've been very fortunate to discover over the years, Jack, was actually something that is so simple. Take much to open the hand, the courage to see that we are closing it, that it's closed. It seems like the normal situation, but actually we have all these hands inside that are tight, that are holding something. And just this simple movement of just opening up. For me it was fashion. There is this saying by a saint called Ramana Maharshi. He died actually 50 years ago, and he used to live in south of India, one of the greatest holy men of India. And he was a man that didn't do much. I mean, literally, nothing. He arrived at this place after experience of awakening when he was, I think, 17 and 13. And didn't really move there. He was sitting in a cave for 10 or 15 years and or more, and then people started gathering around him and eventually built an ashram around him, but he never moved from the little place he was living in for many, many years. And one of the things he said to the people came every day to see him, to ask his advice, and usually he would just sit in silence. But when he talked, one of the occasions that he spoke, he gave the advice, which might sound very, very simple. He said, be without leaving yourself. Be without leaving yourself. And we go, hey, that's easy. I can do that. I mean, doesn't sound like a big thing, right? But I think every one of us, after maybe 3.5 minutes of meditation, experience this, oh, I'm in this storyline now. Oh, this is what is happening. That is what, everything is more important, more interested, more interesting than what is actually going on around right now for me. And at times it's just so, so strange just to look at us, to see us, human being, that most of the time is busy not being where it is, where she is, where he is. It's incredible when you think of it. It's amazing, isn't it? One poem of one of the poets that I love the most, Rumi. And he talks about love a lot in his poems. And to me, it's love and life and something. He says, the way of love is not a subtle argument. The door there is devastation. Do you understand devastation? Harris. Birds make great sky circles of their freedom. How do they learn it? They fall. And falling in wings. It seems to me to be again one kind of affirmation of this place that we arrive in ourselves, that is calling for trust here. We don't know what next moment is going to bring. We have no idea. Many times, the only thing we can do really is trust, is fall. And by falling, something else is happening. Falling can be this movement of just opening the hands, or it can be the movement of letting go of things that we've been carrying all along, sometimes or many times without even knowing. All these many, many bags and suitcases that we are taking with us to our journey, just in case we might need something. I heard someone says once, in Hebrew, she calls it tik pen. Pen yichsar mashu. So, it's like, just in case. So I'll take this and I'll take that. And I think in this retreat specifically, we can appreciate just the simplicity that Yanai was talking about the other day. Just being content with so little. It's not only, it makes us really happy in the moment, but it also gives us this affirmation and this fuel for trust for later. Because if something like that happened to us once, maybe something in ourselves, in our memory, remembers that it's possible. Where when we let go, that we will not crash and we will not fall on our face, but something else would happen, maybe not ever to be. The journey can end very, very quickly. Just to agree to meet whatever we are, whoever we are, wholeheartedly. And it takes sometimes a lot of courage. It's like there's this phrase in English, look the tiger in the eye. It's like, oh my God, I don't don't want to know even what's inside. And sometimes the fears often happen are much, much greater than what's actually in there. But we are so overwhelmed by them that we don't even give ourselves the chance to check, to see what is there. And by seeing, and Vipassana tradition talks a lot about seeing, and the actual translation of the word Vipassana is seeing deeply or seeing clearly or maybe seeing behind. And felt that this seeing is something that is very cold. It's like I'm here and I'm looking at something that is happening to me over there. So I'm here and I'm experiencing something like the body is in pain, something like that. Like I think some of you can relate to that. It's like it's there, you know. And sometimes it can be very helpful to sort of take some space from what is happening. But at other times it might feel cold and isolated. All of us to have a look, not only with the eyes, but actually more with the heart. Because we are very tender inside, and we can't really go inside with knives. The only way we can really go inside is by being very, very careful and very respectful of anything that chooses to present itself when we allow it to happen, when we have this movement of opening up. Walking today, coming back home, and as usual, I'm last in the line, which can be difficult sometimes and sometimes great privilege, like I was feeling today. And I was walking on the same footsteps that you guys were walking just a few minutes before me. And I saw suddenly this beautiful stone, and I picked it up and wow, you know, and like 2 steps later another one and another one, all these stones that you guys left behind. It's like wow. And I was sort of slowing down, I think you can tell walking just in front of me, and I saw myself I realized I was picking stones, like every like moment I was, wow, this is amazing, this I can't leave it here, it's so beautiful, you know, and I was putting it in my pocket. Not sure I should be telling this in a Dharma talk, is this allowed? But something really interesting happened, because the more I was looking at them and picking them up, and like I had this feeling of being a child in a huge, huge, vast playground, and all these toys around, and no one noticed, you know, just me. And I was doing that for a while until my bag became really heavy, and my pockets were like aiming to pull my pants down from so many stones. And I realized I can't take all of those. I can't take all these beautiful stones that I see. And then I say, okay, so maybe for every stone I pick now, I let another stone, I put down another stone. So I was bargaining a little bit with myself. This is really beautiful, but this one, wow, you know. And like, you know how you pick up a stone for the first time, it looks so amazing. And after 5 minutes in your hand, it's like, okay, that's a stone. Okay, I can put it there. So then I saw myself sort of letting go, like picking up one stone and letting go of two, you know. So I was sort of going that direction. Eventually, I'll tell you the end because it can go a bit longer. I let go of most of them. I just left them there. And it came to me that just this sense of their beauty being so intense as it was on the ground, not necessarily in my pocket or in my hand, it was such a relief to know that I'm not wasting this beauty away. I just return it back. I was fortunate enough to be touched by it. I was walking with it for a little while, and then I could let it go and put it back. I still have some stones with me, but most of them were I put down. So I think I just wanna call upon everyone here and invite her or him to see what kind of stones, may they be beautiful or just heavy, we can put aside, we can let go of, we can leave behind, just to be, maybe for the next person to pick it up. We're able to do that, this little practice, what we choose to leave behind, and having this trust that it will be okay without so many things, without these bags, without these stones. Journey is a never-ending journey for me because it's so rich. And on one level, yes, it takes maybe just one turn to look 180 degrees at oneself. And in other levels, it's so full of possibilities. Never an end to what we can let go of. An end to the feeling of being light. I invite all of us to practice letting go and lightness, and do it wholeheartedly. Involve your heart, call it in, invite it to this game of life, that we are somehow in it, or maybe I think I can say more, but I think I can also stop here and sit together in silence for a few minutes and maybe more after that.
Sure, if there is a need to say more. Just very much enjoying listening and receiving what was being shared there. But what we thought was that we'd both speak a little bit tonight, so I'll say a few words. Mind for me actually really is poetry. And the poem that popped into my mind as I was listening that I thought some of you may know and anyway may enjoy is a piece from T.S. Eliot, The Four Quartets and Little Gidding. It's a refrain that I love, and he says, just did really, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know that place for the first time. A condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Journey of coming back to ourselves, to who and what we are. It's a kind of remarkable thing to be engaged in. Remarkable about the one thing that's particularly remarkable about it, and this is leading up to another poem, is, well, it's not leading up to another poem, but I have in mind another poem I'd like to share. And this poem expresses very clearly for me something that I feel really lies at the heart of Dharma teaching and Dharma practice and what the spiritual journey is about, in that it's a journey in which we, certainly for myself, and I know for yourselves, some of you, from things you've said, it's one in which one really has to look at what it is to be who we are, to experience what we experience. And in doing so, there's almost like two processes that go on, and that is expressed or can be understood as both seeing how we're just some little cosmic speck of dust in a really big universe, you know, and we're just here for really a blink of an eye in the history of this vast life system, you know, and our presence or absence is actually, in most fundamental ways, you could say, probably irrelevant, you know. At some level, we see that we see ourselves or imagine ourselves, and you know, admit it, we sometimes believe ourselves to be at the centre of it all, and the whole world is configured around me, you know. And it's very, you know, the old ancient world view was that the earth was in the middle and everything else went around it, you know. And that's just a reflection of what we think. It's like, you know, I'm in the middle and everything goes around me. I heard a quote recently about, you know, one of the really difficult things that can go on is how we feel pressured or hurt by other people's opinions of us. And because we kind of feel like we're in the centre of it all. And this person said, you know, you'd be a lot less worried about what people think of you if you realised how little time they spend doing it. It's like we have the sense of being in the centre. And therefore we think everyone else must think we're in the centre too. But actually, often, everyone else thinks they themselves are in the centre. And part of the kind of the softening and the releasing that happens with Dharma practice is that we realise we're not in the centre. We're not, in terms of our personality and our life and our story and what's going on, the most important thing in the universe. And yet, at the same time, there isn't something else that's more important. And the very process of understanding that we're not at the centre actually takes us to the centre. The actual process of understanding that it's not all revolving around me actually transforms us into something that's incredible. That we already are, but don't necessarily understand. So we have kind of different modes in practice, one of which is where we're kind of, in a way, looking at ourselves in order to see how we're kind of put together, in order to be able to allow ourselves to fall apart a little bit. Sometimes falling apart, you know, as Leela was saying, it's not something we want to do, it's a bit scary. But it's like allowing ourselves to fall apart, we actually see that all the holding that was holding us together actually was painful. It wasn't required, because when we fall apart, it's like we don't fall. We just open. That's one direction of practice. And that trusting, again, just sort of trying to pick up some of the themes, is an image from one of my teachers and a good friend also, Joseph Goldstein. He speaks often about this image of letting go as being like stepping out of a plane. The first parachute jump, and like that moment of and you let go, and then you realize you've got no parachute, and then you realize there's no ground. What happens? No parachute, no ground, no problem. Like that. And then there's another process whereby And kind of, in a way, we're emphasizing this more on this retreat. Rather than kind of looking into and trying to deconstruct our construct, our habit of constructing ourselves, we're actually kind of more looking at the habit we have of seeing everything outside of us, what we call ourself, as distant or separate or apart, which is really just the other aspect of the same process. Rather than focusing in, it's looking out and seeing what's the view we have here. And seeing that actually when we let ourselves feel, when we let ourselves be open, when we're touched by things, we don't feel so separate. We notice that that's not so true. And yet, while at one level we're insignificant, another level we're part of something that's amazing. If we look at something with wonder and see the beauty and the majesty of the world around us, if we realize we're part of that, then we're actually seeing the beauty and the majesty of ourselves. Not our small selves, but what we could call our larger selves. Our undifferentiated self, we could say. And in this process, as well as kind of letting go, we're also gathering together and bringing forth from ourselves. In order to let go, we have to cultivate qualities like courage and honesty and compassion and tenderness. Good qualities, qualities that it's that this world is blessed by having brought and having them brought into it. And in that we need to do this in order to let go, and as we learn more to let go, what we see is we actually, it's like those qualities, those seed, we could say, capacities that we have, that we could call wisdom and compassion, understanding the way things are, which is wisdom, and caring for, responding with kindness to the way things are, which is compassion. That these capacities, these qualities actually start to be brought forth from us. And we notice that maybe in responding to ourselves or to something else, we're more tender, we're more kind, we're more friendly. So there's this dual on of in coming home and arriving, and as we both become less important and more precious. Not in conflict. We somehow think that if we're precious we must be really important. Or if we're not important we couldn't be precious. It's not true. The source of our preciousness is revealed. But because it's revealed in all things, how can we be more important than anything else? Because it's revealed by all things. How can we be more important than any of them? And yet still precious. Because we are part of what reveals that. We are part of the process of revelation.
The poem's thunder now, but anyway.
I'd like to read a poem. I should have waited till tomorrow, but I couldn't, so anyway. You'll see why. And it, to me, speaks very directly to the process of our coming home, but also of our revealing. Christmas, our light, really, literally. And just because I know if for some of you the English is a little, it's not quite as easy, it kind of moves between two different frameworks. I hope that'll be clear in the way I tell it. It's almost like two poems written, interwoven into each other, but it's a poem. And I'll read it more than once. It's called The Buddha's Last Instruction by Mary Oliver. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness, to send the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward, it thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed here. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. "Make of yourself a light," said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness, to send the first signal a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man. He lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly I'm not needed here. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. "Make of yourself a light," said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around them the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. "Make of yourself a light," said the Buddha before he died. May our journey home to where we are be illuminated by the light of our hearts, the light that we are.